Dr. Morsi is a professor of health policy and management and psychiatry at the Schools of Public Health and Medicine and deputy director for research at the Cecil G. Shepps Center for Health Services Research at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He has studied the interface between mental health and the criminal justice system for 25 or 30 years now, right, Joe?
Thanks, Gary.
Afternoon. Using the mouse to advance this?
Yep.
Let me try this. A couple of acknowledgments. This is research. Let me just back up a moment. I'm going to be talking about expedited Medicaid restoration for persons with severe mental illness leaving jails, prisons, or state hospitals in the state of Washington. And so, to acknowledge the funding sources, the work on this project was supported by the SAMHSA Mental Health Transformation Grant, which Washington was one of, in the end, I guess about a dozen states that received this funding. Also, an NIMH research grant that we're currently doing. Linda Frisman is my co-PI on this project. And that study is a comparison between the state of Washington and Connecticut. And Linda was instrumental in helping us put the administrative data together for Connecticut. And David Mancuso, a colleague in Washington, was instrumental as well with regard to those data. So these are my disclosures and Gary's disclosures. Oh, and I forgot, Gary is my colleague here. And co-author of this. So, cutting to the chase, Medicaid, as you know, is the single largest payer of mental health services for people with severe mental illness. And many advocates suggest that given what Gary has referred to in terms of the frequency of people with mental illness in the criminal justice system, that one of the key things that would help those individuals just better in the community is having access to their benefits in a timely fashion. Especially in institutions, especially prisons, people lose their Medicaid benefits within a period of time. I think it's technically a full month. As soon as they are in a setting for at least 30 consecutive days, they can lose their Medicaid benefits. So the idea is, as they reenter the community, having these benefits would make a big difference. And so a number of states around the country over the last several years have been adopting policies to do that, to expedite the restoration of Medicaid. By that terminology, of course, we're referring to people who had Medicaid prior to entry into the institutions. And what was spurring us on is that there's not much research, really, supporting the evidence behind these policies. There was a study reported recently in the January 2011 issue of Psych Services reporting a relatively small study in the state of Oklahoma, but reporting positive findings that increased Medicaid enrollment on the day of release, 15 percentage point increase, as opposed to a control group that was identified using propensity matching criteria, and also increased Medicaid reimbursed mental health service use by about 16 percentage points within the 90 days following release. Gary and I, a few years ago, did some studies comparing King County, which is the county in which Seattle, Washington is located, with Pinellas County, Florida, which is Clearwater, Florida, and, outside of Tampa Bay. And what we were able to show, and this is a jail population as opposed to the first one being a prison population, is that people who left jails with Medicaid had quicker service access and more used more community services. They had fewer arrests. They were arrested, but not nearly at the same frequency as the control group, and they spent more days in the community. But other than these two studies, I'm not really aware of anything that really speaks to evidence showing that Medicaid makes a difference in these settings. And there have been no comparative study done of jails, prisons, and state hospitals. So the Washington state context is that the state legislature passed House Bill 1290, which became effective in 2006, and it was a mandate for expedited Medicaid restoration for people with severe mental illness. But in Washington, it was applied to jail populations, the state hospitals themselves, as well as prisons. On the front end, it's kind of a two-step process. Referrals are identified within the institutional settings, so staff of the prisons, the jails, and the state hospitals identify people who are eligible to be restored to Medicaid benefits. The approvals of those referrals happen in the community, and as part of the legislation that was passed in the state of Washington, the legislature appropriated dollars for 14 full-time equivalent positions, which were distributed across the state in these community service offices, which were the local Social Security offices in Washington. And it was those individuals who actually acted on the referrals from the institutions. The research questions that we posed is, who is referred and approved? Do approval rates vary across these facilities? Does Medicaid restoration, in fact, lead to greater use of outpatient and inpatient health services in the community and lower rates of criminal justice recidivism? And are there differential service use and recidivism effects across the three institutional settings? The research methods, we essentially used a case control study design, identifying individuals with serious mental illness or co-occurring mental illness and substance abuse diagnoses that were released from these institutions in the state of Washington during calendar year 2006. And what we're doing here is comparing those who were approved versus not approved for expedited Medicaid. We're using linked administrative data. One of the features of the state of Washington is that on an ongoing basis now for almost the past 10 years, they on their own have linked together administrative data for their Department of Social and Health Services, which is an umbrella agency that encompasses about 13 categoric agencies: Medicaid, mental health, substance abuse, child welfare, a variety of other things. And so using those data, we were able to study these three institutions, the people who were placed on restored Medicaid and those who weren't, who were referred but not placed on. This was a preliminary investigation to the R01 that we currently have. And today I just want to highlight some simple differences, keeping an eye on the number of tests that we're doing. So here are a couple of charts that show what the frequency of events were in the institutional setting. So on the left there is a pie chart that says that across the three institutions, 2,516 people were referred. Half of those were referred from local jails that are run by the city or the counties in Washington. And the other half were almost divided equally between state hospitals and city and county jails. If you look at the approval rates, though, some dramatic differences, where in the state hospitals, about 91% of the people who were referred were approved for restored Medicaid. That dropped down to about 78% in the state prisons and down to about 58% in local and jails. These are some breakdown characteristics of the three populations. So here we're limiting the sample to people with an SMI or an SMI plus substance abuse diagnosis. And about 58% of all of the people who were referred met those diagnostic criteria. The number is 1,700 and something, whatever the addition of 613, 275, and 555 is. So the question here is, How similar or how different are the restored, not restored samples in each of the institutional settings? Because that's the comparisons that we're making in these reports. The yellow asterisks identify comparisons where there is a statistical difference. In general, with a few exceptions, the restored, not restored groups look pretty similar, but there's some interesting differences, and I was struck watching Gary's presentation, which I hadn't seen before, because he was comparing sort of like two of these columns for the diversion population as to how similar or different some of these characteristics actually are. Not surprising, again, what we're focusing on are people who are being restored to Medicaid. And one of the basic criteria of that is that you've got to be disabled. And in these instances, the presumption is that it's psychiatric disability that's causing that. So if you look at the prior eligibility box on the bottom, the systematic difference across the three samples is that the restored population is more disabled than the non-restored population. I'll come back to that. That does have some implications for our analyses. If you look at the other characteristics in terms of gender, they tend to be more women in the county jails and the state hospital samples than in the state prisons. And of course, in the typical state prison, 80% of the population is male. But proportionately, within the state prisons, there are more women in the restored sample than in the other two populations. This is the state of Washington, so the general population is largely Caucasian, and so that's what has those very high rates of white there. In terms of age, the age group is pretty similar across institutions. Tends to be a little bit of a difference in the state hospitals, the restored people being a little bit older. With regard to diagnosis, some interesting differences as well. If you look at the state hospital, it's a 60-40 split between people who have severe mental illness, but at least no recorded substance abuse diagnoses, and 60% of them having the combination. But if you look over at the criminal justice settings, 90% of the population is duly diagnosed, and a relatively small percentage are just psychiatric illness only. So there are some differences here, and but not as many as you might think. One of the things that we could do with these data that I haven't done yet is to draw a Venn diagram, because we have access to these data over time, and so we could look at what is the overlap in these populations. In other words, how distinct are these three groups? And there is a lot of overlap between them, because in the first instance, you can't get to prison without first passing through jail. That's just the way the legal system is set up. You get arrested, you get placed in jail. If you get convicted of a felony, you get sent to prison. State hospitals, you would think, wow, are very different. But in fact, research in the state of Washington, I think, suggests that something over 40% of the people receiving mental health services in their system have a prior felony offense in the criminal justice system. So it sort of depends at what point in time you're catching people as to whether they're in one institutional setting or the other. And that's kind of interesting in terms of these comparisons. So now what we want to look at is, okay, what happens? What are the differences between people who got their Medicaid restored and those that didn't? And in all of these slides, the green box is going to show people who were restored in the red boxes or were not. So this is outpatient service utilization within 30 days post-release from their institutional setting. And the state hospitals by far had the highest rate. Virtually almost everybody who was restored had an outpatient visit within 30 days in the community. That dropped down to a third of that in the state prisons, slightly more in the county jails, and a difference that is that state hospitals and the county jails, there is a difference between the two groups that is statistically significant. There's an interesting trend in the prisons, although the differences are not significant. So looking at the three colored circles in the middle, this is looking at the prisoners who are restored, not restored, what their use of outpatient services was 30 days after release, 60 days after release, 90 days after release. And the differences between the groups are not statistically significant, but it's interesting to see that, in fact, there is an increment, and the increment is going on both the restored group and the non-restored group. What's that all about? It's really open for interpretation. I don't think we have any way of answering that. Could well be that these people are on probation, and what we're seeing here is an effect of the probation officer, because probation is something that was assigned independently of whether their Medicaid was restored or not. But over time, over that three-month period, there's a growing increase of the prison sample in using mental health services. This is the results of a survival analysis, days to first outpatient visit. What's the lag time? One of the strong ideas behind restoring Medicaid is this sort of critical time experience. When people are coming out of these institutional settings, they really need to access services, especially mental health services, quickly. So this is looking at, on average, what was the delay among the populations in terms of receiving their first service. And again, the state hospital populations tend to be the ones that are most ready to receive services or receive them sooner. The two criminal justice situations are much longer, almost on average, even for the restored group, 2 months after release. This is psychiatric hospitalization, distinguishing on the left local hospitals, local general hospitals, and on the right state hospitals. This is at the point of 180 days, so this is 6 months. I should point out that for these data, the length of our follow-up was only 6 months. So this is sort of looking at where people stood at our last observation point. And as you can see, that the state hospital population was more likely to be using both local and state hospitals. And very little of the other two groups were using these services at all. This is the jail. This is our measure in these data of recidivism. So jail use within 90 days post-release, jail use within 180 days, so 3 months versus 6 months. And the pattern that sort of appears in these data, if you think back on the prior slide, most of the hospital use was being done by state hospital populations. There's a tendency for people classified in the institutional setting to reuse that setting and not use the other settings very much. So in a sense, that stands in contrast to this idea that I was mentioned earlier about overlapping populations. They do overlap, but they're not a common population. So here, in terms of the jails, the people who use the jails more often are people that are in the jail sample. And similarly to the people who use prisons were the people in the prison sample. Not sure what that says. Does that say something about the individuals? Does that say something about administratively and the authorities involved in terms of what happens to people when they misbehave in the community? So a couple of key findings. The first one is that clearly there's a large volume of restoration referrals. This was the first year of the program. 200 people a month were being identified, with over 70% of them coming from the criminal justice system. And so the implication is that large numbers of people with severe mental illness can be restored from criminal justice settings. The lowest rates of approval were occurring in the jail. Jails are known for short-term, unpredictable lengths of stay, whereas people in state hospitals and certainly in state prisons, you know they're going to be there for defined periods of time, so it's much easier to do the paperwork in enrolling these individuals. Jails are much more chaotic places, and people often get released in the middle of the night or wherever without anyone sort of knowing about it. And it's very difficult to go through this kind of paper eligibility process that is going on here. So still a number of people, I think the rates were around 60%, were restored from jails. So we're finding in these data that there is a positive effect in being restored. There was a greater use of services for state hospital people and jail releasees. less local hospital use for the state hospital releasees, and we found no association with the likelihood of jail contact, at least a third of the people in each of those settings. Were placed in jail over that six-month period. So a couple of limitations. The first one is a weak control group in these comparisons. What we're doing is comparing restored with not restored people. Those are not two randomized groups. The clinicians in each of those settings, or clinicians in the community that were doing the approvals, were making some determination that these individuals were not eligible. And recall that there are several criteria that are involved here. One is psychiatric in terms of disability and your ability to work. The idea is that you are incapacitated, unable to work. But there's also a income requirement here. What we need to do is a much careful comparison using propensity score and methods. We have kind of a smallish sample for state hospitals, 275. We need a longer follow-up time. Here we're looking at 6 months. We need 2 or 3 years. The cost-effectiveness of these programs remains unclear from these data. Who really benefits? Is it the prisons that are benefiting, the mental health, the jails? Who pays for these services? Are the benefits and the payments aligned? They misaligned? What are the policy implications of that? This is the first comparative look at these three things. The findings clearly indicate that a large number of people can be restored. Our ongoing study will overcome many of the limitations. We'll use a much longer time period, propensity matching, multiple indicators, two-state comparison. The NMH study, however, will only address prisons, so that we won't be able to say anything from that study about jails and state hospitals. So clearly, more research will be needed to understand the cost effectiveness of those programs. Thank you. Yes.
I'm not sure if it makes a difference. I just wonder if the jurisdiction you're working in is one that suspends or terminates Medicaid for people who are going into prisons and jails.
At this time, it was termination. There are a number of states around who are saying, why bother terminating them? It creates a bigger administrative hoop to get people back on. Let's just suspend their benefits. So this is speaking to the termination rather than the suspension.
Madam? In this sample, did you know what the residential status was post-release?
In terms of what type of living arrangement?
Or any.
Do we know? No.
There are housing data, but they're not very good, so we don't trust them. So we'll be able to know whether they're on parole or not.